Good morning. I'd like to open this early morning clinic, Making Meetings Work. The purpose of this session is to assist you to be effective in running meetings, and to take us through the program will be Stephen Fleming, who's the clerk of the City of Kelowna. He's also a part-time instructor with the Capilano University's local government program, so he runs that portion out of Kelowna. He's worked for local government for the last 18 years, first with the District of North Vancouver and more recently with Kelowna. His main interests are with civic governance and acting as a mentor to young or inspiring professionals. So please join me in welcoming Stephen.
Thanks, Gary. So we'll have a fairly informal first session for you for today. If you have questions, just please raise your hand, or if I'm saying something that doesn't make sense, please feel free to raise your hand or interrupt. So what we'll be covering in the next 45 minutes or so is a little bit on council authority, a little bit on meeting rules and etiquette, and some comments on public participation with respect to council meetings. And a number of the things that I'll be talking about will be touched on by other presenters over the next 2 days. You may get, or you probably will get, differing interpretations of some of the things that we'll be talking about. Making meetings work is as much an art as it is a science, and there are different ways to get to the same goal. And as I'll sort of, one of my themes that I'll emphasize is you need to find a way that works for your council and your corporate culture and your community. And how meetings are conducted across the province can there's some degree of varying, but there's some fundamentals that are true to all of them as well. So we'll start off with just some, when I'm speaking of council, although you hear quite often the phrase mayor and council, strictly speaking, and when you look at the legislation, council includes both the mayor and the councillors. And so that's council is, when I'm speaking of council, I'm speaking of the mayor and the councillors together. And council's a continuing body, and you're experiencing that right now, in that unlike the provincial or federal government where bills die when the writs dropped, you've inherited numerous decisions made by the previous council and sometimes the council before that. You'll consider bylaws that the previous council may have given first reading to or first, second, and third readings to. You might be sitting at a public hearing, for example, that the previous council advanced. It doesn't mean you can't change the decisions of previous councils, but you've inherited them all, and council's a continuing body in that way. The other thing to keep in mind is that your powers and your duties and functions are exercised by you at meetings and at a council meeting by bylaw or by resolution. And this is there's a collective decision-making built into the system. Real emphasis that to make that work, you need good communication, good cooperation, and good collaboration. And that's both amongst yourselves and your staff, and again with the community. And so this is some big picture slide here, is that your big picture sort of responsibilities, and this again flows from the community charter, and is to consider your municipalities when, if you might see city on the slide, that of course would apply to a town or a village or a district or anything like that. Well-being and interests of the municipality, contribute to the development and evaluation of policies and programs, respecting services and other activities, and to participate in council meetings. So one of the few things you are required to do is to attend and participate council meetings. And if you don't, if you miss too many council meetings, there can be repercussions of that. So it sort of raises the question, and this is where, this is an important one, is, well, what is a meeting? So what constitutes a meeting? So there's a couple things that you're looking for. The main one is, what's the purpose of your gathering? is it a what's called the sort of legal definition is what the courts have looked at, is it a material part of the decision-making process? You might not be making a decision, but is it a material part of the decision-making process? So being here today at this, if you have a quorum of your council here, is not a council meeting. This is training, education, orientation. You may have similar sessions in your respective municipalities. But if it goes into, oh, this is a part of the decision-making continuum or the decision-making process, then you might be looking at, oh, are we holding a meeting? And if you are holding a meeting, there's a couple of rules. You have to have quorum, and that's another definition of are you having a meeting, size of your council plus one. So for the example there, if you have a 9-person council, quorum is 5. Public notice is required of your meetings. Whether the meeting is open or closed to the public, you still have to let the public know your meeting. So the previous council would have decided on your regular meetings for 2015, or you may have done that late last year, and that's published all the dates that you're going to meet in 2015. You can, of course, meet outside those dates or in addition to those dates, and there's a process to do that. But even if it's for a closed purpose, you still have to let the public know that you're meeting. and meetings are open to the public unless there's a specific reason to close them. And although the legislation speaks to open and closed meetings, most commonly the closed meetings are referred to as in-camera meetings. And again, it's a good idea to have staff present at your meetings. And as I said before, a bit of your corporate culture will determine how broadly or narrowly you've defined part of the decision-making process. And some of the comments that came up when this was raised and discussed yesterday, it's not meant to stop communicating between members of council. It's not meaning that if you run into each other or if you have a barbecue at the mayor's house, it's not meant that you're saying you can't do that. You just have to be aware of where have you crossed a threshold from a gathering to a legal meeting. The other thing that's come up, and there's actually been a couple of cases in the United States, is thanks to technology, you have to be careful that you're not conducting a meeting by email. And there was, a case in the States where a council was making decisions collectively but via email. And the judge determined, well, you know, you were having a meeting by email and you didn't properly say that you were doing this. The public obviously had no way of observing or knowing about this. And so that's another thing where, with today's technology, you've got to be a little careful that you're not inadvertently doing this. And having that balance between having communication with each other, but knowing when you've actually had a meeting. So I referenced opened and closed meetings. So every meeting starts open, and then you close it by resolution. And on the agenda, it'll list the reasons under the charter that you're going into the closed session. So there's 15 reasons that you can close it that are discretionary, and there's actually now 5 that you must consider at a closed meeting. And those are laid out in the community charter, and usually when you get your agenda, the staff who have put the agenda together have thought about this and placed things appropriately on an opened or closed agenda. That doesn't mean if you don't think that should be either way that you can't question it. So certainly sometimes things will come up and there'll be a question like, well, why is this on a closed agenda? What's the reason behind it? Or conversely, shouldn't this be on a closed agenda? And that's a discussion that council can have, and usually staff will give some kind of advice as to why they think it falls under one of the reasons to go in camera or more under the charter. And then for the discretionary ones, because they're discretionary, council can determine yes or no whether they think it meets the test. So the most common are the so-called 3 L's, which is the land, legal, and labor. And certainly the majority, I would suspect, of the in-camera or closed item agendas that you'll see or have seen already would fall under one of those 3 broader categories. And that's the most, as I said, the most common reasons for going. One of the ones that's required is that last bullet, the negotiations with the province. And so, for example, if one of the ministries is going to make some funding announcement later in the week but maybe want to give you a heads up, or you want that might get raised at a council meeting, or if you're meeting with your local MLA or MLAs and they're telling you things that are not public because they're confidential, the different reasons you can fall under that. But that's a required one. It's not one that's discretionary. And that would be one of the ones that you might see as a required one used more often. Any questions so far? No? Okay, good. So your so-called regular council meetings are the ones that you've agreed to for this year already in terms of their dates and times. They might be during the day. They might be in the evening. You might have both. You might be meet weekly, you might meet bi-weekly or a couple times a month, or you might have a rule that, if there's a fifth Monday in a month, you don't meet that Monday. Those are all in your procedure bylaw. Usually you've got a provision that you can go into the closed or in-camera session, and as I said, you do that by resolution. That doesn't mean if there's no items you can't go close. It just takes a resolution to go close, and you have to make sure that you've got a reason that falls under the legislation. And my earlier comments about, you can have workshops, shirts, they're called different things, workshops, shirt sleeve sessions. If they're part of that decision-making continuum, they're still a meeting. And right now, especially with new councils, there's a lot of, going back to my earlier comment, that there's a lot of decisions from the previous council that you've inherited, because council is a decision-making body. Especially if you're new to council, you won't have had that background that they may have had to get to where you are. So to update you on the process or to perhaps seek your advice as this is the direction we're going, are you still good with that? Those are, even if they're done as informal or called a workshop or a shirt sleeve session or whatever they're called, if it's part of that decision-making continuum, it still is a meeting and it should be conducted as such. And that doesn't mean that the open and close rules apply. Certainly if it's a closed reason to go in camera, you can certainly do that. But that's something that you need to keep in mind is when have you sort of crossed the threshold from a gathering into a meeting. And right now you might be having a lot of sort of policy background meetings and when does it cease being orientation and start going into actually now you're going to be using this information to make specific decisions. The other thing is your meetings may have a provision to hear from the public. They may not. And this will vary across the province, and I'll have some more comments on that towards the end as to the pros and cons. But some councils have a sort of an open mic session. Some have a how do you deal with delegations who want to come to council. Some are very open with that. Some are quite restrictive. But usually there'll be some kind of provision, again, in your procedure bylaw as to how to deal with these things. And so a sample meeting agenda might follow the following. And so you might have, as I said, public in attendance or delegations, and how that is defined or interpreted will vary widely across the province. Then you might get reports from council committees. Again, depending on your structure, you may have advisory committees of council. You may have committees that yourselves sit on a couple. Really, that can really vary depending on your corporate structure and your governance structure. Then you might have a section where you hear your development application reports, which would be bylaws for first reading, or might want to advance to a public hearing or development permits or things of that nature. Then the other types of reports, which are basically anything else that's not to do with development. You might have draft resolutions, give readings, bylaws. And then usually there's an opportunity, and sometimes this is at the beginning of the meeting as opposed to the end, where individual members of council can have an opportunity to say, oh, this is some of the things I've been doing since council last met. And I might have, I represented council at a midget hockey event or it might be something that you want to discuss or raise. And again, this will be in your procedure bylaw, and there'll be that's why your agenda's order should look similar. Doesn't mean it can't be changed if you don't like the order. There's just a process to go through to do that. And this is one of the areas where you have some flexibility as to how do you want to structure your agenda, what order do you want things, and how do you want it to flow. And again, you'll have inherited the structure of previous councils, but it doesn't mean that you can't change it if you want to change it for some reason. Now, a specific type of meeting is a public hearing, and it's a bit of an interesting beast. They may be during the day or during the evening. There's examples of both, depending, again, on your procedure bylaw and what sort of the custom has been. You may hold a meeting immediately after the public hearing, or you may not. Sometimes, certainly when I worked at North Vancouver District, public hearing was held, and then that was it. The bylaws came to a future Monday meeting for council to consider. Move to Kelowna, hold the public hearing. Once the public hearing's closed, then council goes right into a regular meeting and considers the bylaws that they just heard at public hearing. Both are correct. There's not a right way or a wrong way. It's sort of what works for your community and your organization. And again, length of public hearings, you may have had a couple already this council term or not. They can vary greatly. They could be quite short. They can be very, very long. Certainly, I've participated in public hearings that have gone on for hours and hours and hours. Sometimes you might want to adjourn it to a future day. Especially if you start later in the evening. You don't want to do sort of legislation by exhaustion. Making decisions at 2 o'clock in the morning isn't always the best thing to be doing. And so the purpose of the public hearing is very, as I said, a very special type of meeting. You're considering OCP, which is Official Community Plan, or rezoning bylaws, and amendments to those two bylaws. So anyone who believes they have an interest in property can speak. Some places have now, certainly in Kelowna, we instituted, there's a timer. And in our procedures, it says that if you're speaking at a public hearing, you only have a certain number of minutes. So the applicant, for example, only gets 15 minutes. And then members of the public get 5. If you're representing a community association, you get 10. And we actually have a timer that counts it down, and that it's gone over very, very well with everybody because it's very fair. It gives everybody knows that ahead of time how much time they have. People, whether they're applicants or members of the public, prepare knowing that that's about their deadline. And that doesn't mean that they can't be asked questions. That's just their presentation time. And it's also, when you have a lot of people who want to speak at a public hearing, everyone gets a chance to speak. Much more people get a chance to speak than when you don't have any time restrictions. I've been at public hearings where one intervener may present for 45 minutes, or an applicant may want to present for an hour. And so, this way it really focuses what's the message you want to get to the council. It's worked very well. So if you have public hearings that go on for a long time or have interveners or applicants who present for a very long time, you might want to look into instigating some kind of timer restriction. As long as it's reasonable and it's done fairly for everybody, it's perfectly appropriate as long as you've, as I said, got a proper policy base to it. Sure. Yes. Yeah.
And what constitutes an association?
No, we have in Kelowna, there's a policy as to what defines a community association. You need to meet a certain threshold of not just call yourself one. We have a policy to try to minimize overlapping geographic, for example, and they have to give us an annual, submit a report annually, tell us how many members they have, copies of minutes of their annual general meeting, We encourage them to incorporate as societies, as nonprofit societies, and give some financial assistance so they can go through that incorporation process. And so if they meet that threshold, then they get the one of the sort of then they get that 10 minutes they would qualify. Other groups that just spring up, there might be a single issue group. If they've not met that criteria, then they don't get the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes. Yeah. So if you have, usually it's the president or the president and another member of the executive may come up together, but they don't get 20 minutes if there's two of them. It's Association X, you know, the McKinley Landing Residents Association, which is one, whether it's two people up or three people up or one person up, they collectively get 10 minutes. Yeah. Because otherwise that could be manipulated and you'd have one association up there for an hour saying they have a six-person executive. Yeah. 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 Sir, was there another question over here? No? Okay. Important thing to remember in a public hearing, the purpose is literally to hear from the public. And so you will hear things that you don't agree with. You will hear things that are probably factually incorrect. You will hear things that will at times agitate you. You will have interveners or applicants that are quite... act in a, say, a condescending or rude manner towards individual or council collectively. But the purpose of the public hearing isn't to debate them at the public hearing or to, you can certainly ask questions, but the, you're not there to debate someone who comes up and says, I don't support this rezoning or I support this rezoning. You're to hear from them. They certainly need to be held to a appropriate level of conduct for a council and a public hearing setting, but you're not there to debate them at that time. And then the other thing to keep in mind is once the public hearing is closed, you cannot get new representations or further representations from the applicant or proponents or opponents to it once the public hearing is closed. And so one of the if the public hearing is closed and council hasn't discussed it yet, you've got to keep in mind that, okay, I can't, if correspondence comes in, for example, staff then don't circulate that to council after the public hearing's closed. And so during a public hearing, the process might be usually staff, and you've already heard the application at once because you would have said that this application has enough merit to forward it to public hearing. So at a regular meeting, staff would have come up and recommended or recommended not that you forward this application at least as far as public hearing and you give the bylaw first or second reading. And then staff usually then review the application, the merits or lack thereof of the application as it applies to your zoning bylaw, official community plan, and any other appropriate policies. Your corporate officer or city clerk may somehow indicate who has written in either in favor or opposed or made some indication of the correspondence received. Yeah, yeah.
Is there a kind of an idea of best practices for receiving correspondence in terms of deadlines?
Yeah, that's a really good question, is about when should there be a cutoff time for receiving public hearing correspondence? What we've done in Cologne is put in a policy that say if you're making a written submission, it must be in by 4 o'clock the business day before the public hearing. So council holds public hearing on Tuesday evenings. So you have until Monday at 4 o'clock to submit your written submission, and then that gives everyone time to have actually read it before the public hearing. What we were finding was a lot of people would submit things on the day of the public hearing or actually at the public hearing, and council doesn't have any time to read them because you can't be reading submitted correspondence and then trying to listen to somebody who's speaking at the same time. And the other thing is the procedural fairness, which there's lots of rules of procedure fairness that are put on to public hearing processes. And you need to make sure that everybody has access to the same information. So the applicant has a right to see what people are writing in and for or opposed. Similarly, other members of the public want to know what the applicant has to say. And so we've put in, and it's a soft deadline. You know, things will come in overnight, say, so Tuesday morning we might see, has anything come in to the clerk's mailbox for public hearings overnight, and we'll get that to the councillors. But if someone shows up at noon on Tuesday, we say, well, can you come to the meeting tonight because, you know, you're running out of time for councillors to actually have read the and considered the your comments, or for the applicant or others to as well. And sometimes someone will read a letter on behalf of somebody else, but we're pretty restrictive as to submitting new information at public hearings, certainly not by the applicant, or if someone shows up and says, these are my speaking notes, then that's not considered new. But if someone says, here's a 20-page report I did on this topic, then it's like, well, wait a minute, you've not submitted that soon enough. And so that seems, again, has worked well. There was some pushback when we implemented that a number of years ago, but we communicated that to all the community associations. It's in our public hearing information that goes out to the public, and we get, as I said, it's a soft deadline. It's not, you submitted this at 4:05, you can't go type of thing. There's a reasonableness test that we do, and most people follow it and understand it, and it's followed and appreciated. But it took a couple of years for that to get going. But it certainly makes it a lot easier that you're not plunking down 50 or 60 pages on the councillor's desk when the public hearing starts, because when do you read that? Especially with our practice is we don't have a break. You hear the public hearing, and then that same evening you're considering, do you want to advance the bylaw or not? So you don't have time to go home and read it after the public hearing's over either. So that's sort of worked that way. So in terms of how a public hearing might run, as I said, list of correspondents. Then usually the applicant has a chance to present. Again, in our case, it's 15 minutes. They have an option to showing a PowerPoint or using an overhead slide if they so wish. And then council can ask questions at any time. They may then have 20 minutes of questions for the applicant. Then the public gets a chance to speak, and again, they may have questions to certain interveners. And then usually the applicant can respond to questions that were raised, because sometimes an intervener, a member of the public, may ask a question that staff can't answer. It's really a question for the applicant to answer. And so they're keeping track of those questions and then get an opportunity to come back up and say, the intervener who asked about what kind of landscaping buffer will there be on the south side of the property, here's what we're proposing, or whatever the question is. That's sort of the process that you'll see variations of during public hearing meetings. Do any other questions on public hearings while we're here? No? Okay, good. So in terms of getting back to whether it's a public hearing or any type of council meeting, the mayor, or you'll have some kind of mechanism that if the mayor is away or absent or has a conflict for a particular item, you'll have a deputy mayor on some kind of rotation. It can vary whether it's monthly, whether it's divided up quarterly, or there's all sorts of different ways to designate who's the deputy mayor, but that person is the one that's presiding or running the meeting. And the mayor determines who speaks, including staff, and in what order. You may have an electronic system. It might be just keeping track of raising hands. And I know in Kelowna, in the chambers, the councillors can press a button if they want to speak, and a list is displayed that the mayor and I can see in terms of the speaking order. But still, it's the mayor who determines who speaks and in what order. And a resolution has to be moved or seconded before it can be debated and discussed and voted on. And occasionally a member of council may want to move something and not get a seconder. Well, if the rest of council doesn't want to second the motion, then that's it. You can't keep that. The motion would have lost to lack of seconder. So you need to have that first and seconder be before you can actually have a proper debate on it. And you want to make sure you're not debating something before there's a resolution on the floor. That sometimes just a little thing to watch for. And then at some point, the mayor might say, usually after everyone's had an opportunity to speak to the resolution, then they'll say, okay, it's time to call the question, which means it's time to vote. And so you're assumed to vote it in favor unless you physically make the effort to vote opposed. So if the mayor says it's time to vote and you don't raise your hand, you're assumed to have voted in favor. You need to physically have indicate somehow that you're voting opposed. And you can't change your mind afterwards. A couple of council terms ago, a councillor was voting against a motion, then when it came time to vote, I'm not sure why, he didn't indicate he voted against it, and then about two items later, I got a little note passed up to me saying, oh, I forgot to vote against on two items ago. Can you, you know, say that I voted against in the minutes? And I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't. he wasn't paying attention when it was called time to vote. So little things like that can happen. And so you cannot abstain from voting. There's no opportunity in the legislation to abstain. If you're there, you're voting. And I said it, unless you're physically making that effort to say I'm opposed, you're assumed to have voted in favor. The other thing I get a lot of from the public and the media in particular is it'll be, oh, there was a tie vote and the mayor had to break it. And that's not the case. The mayor, as my earlier comment, council is the mayor and the councillors, and one of your duties as a member of council is you vote. And so the mayor votes at the same time as everybody else. Because the mayor is presiding and running the meeting, depending on how he or she conducts themselves and speaks, it may appear that, oh, the mayor's voting to break a tie, but they're not. If those in favor, those opposed, the mayor votes the same as everybody else and doesn't have any special tie-breaking abilities. If for some reason you don't have full council and say you have an even number of people there, a tie vote is actually a defeat. And so that's the thing that your corporate officer will keep in mind. So a resolution can be moved or seconded, discussed, debated, voted on at an open or closed meeting, but you can only give readings to a bylaw at an open meeting. So you may have a bylaw where you need some legal advice on before you consider it. You can certainly hear that legal advice at an in-camera or closed meeting, but you then can't proceed and give the bylaw any readings at the closed meeting. You'd have to go then wait to an open meeting to actually give any readings to that bylaw. And most bylaws require at least two meetings to adopt. For municipalities, you may be able to give first, second, and third readings at one meeting, but you have to wait at least a day before you can adopt. In the zoning process, you might give the bylaw a reading before public hearing, and that's one of the examples for a municipality where you can give third reading and adoption at the same reading for a rezoning or an OCP, assuming there's no other conditions at third reading that need to be met. The other thing to keep in mind, and this is something, again, that the staff will be aware of as well, is that some bylaws require a majority vote of all council as opposed to a simple majority of the number of council members there that day. So, for example, if you have an official community plan amending bylaw, that requires a majority of all council voting in favor, which if you have nine councillors, that means five. So if for some reason you only have six people there that day, you might have a couple away or someone has a conflict or whatever, and the OCP bylaw is up for readings and four vote in favor and two vote opposed, although it's a 4-2 vote in favor, it's actually defeated because you needed a majority of all council, which is five, to advance that bylaw. And so these are little things like that your corporate officer will be aware of, but it can be sort of counterintuitive sometimes. You think, well, four people voted yes and two people voted no. How on earth can this bylaw not proceed? It's because it's one of the few ones where the legislation requires a majority of all council as opposed to a majority of those present to advance it. Other bylaws require public and or provincial approval before they can be adopted. Borrowing bylaws, for example, are quite a convoluted process, and you give the bylaw readings, you fire the bylaw off to the province. They then approve the bylaw at third reading. Then you have to start an elector, either assent or an elector approval process, either through what's called an AAP process, alternate approval process, or by referendum. And then once, assuming you get a favorable response with that, then you can adopt, and then you have to wait another 30 days for a quashing period. And if you miss any of these steps, your borrowing, this is for long-term borrowing, your borrowing bylaw can be invalid, might not be approved by the province, and the Municipal Finance Authority might not borrow the money for you. So you have to be careful, and also keep in mind that this is going to take weeks, and if you have a project where you need to borrow money from, you need to factor these timelines in, most of which you have no control over. Another example would be if you're, in terms of public input prior to adoption, would be if you're regulating business through your business license bylaw. Those businesses that might be impacted have an opportunity to make representations to council prior to adoption. So that may be at a council meeting, it might be by correspondence, but you have to decide how, and you can't just say we're going to give first three readings one day and adopt the next with a business license regulation. You need to have an opportunity for input that's reasonable, otherwise your bylaw could be found to be invalid. And these are just little things that, as I said, your staff should know and will know, but little things to keep in mind that you can't always adopt at the next meeting. And the last thing I want to make some comment on is public input during council meetings. And certainly the public is able to provide input at public meetings or closed meetings. There are provisions where somebody other than staff or elected officials can be at a closed meeting. But it's usually regulated by both the charter and by your procedure bylaw. And really I'm talking about public input at council meetings, because at public hearings and for some types of development applications, it's governed by the rules of procedure fairness, legislation, and your procedure bylaw. So all the rules that we've talked about public hearings, those are very established. There's a lot of case law on what you have to do and not do. And of course, the public can attend any council meeting, but that's different from if they want to say something or address council. And the ability to directly address council during council meetings varies greatly across the province. And it'll be partly what's your culture, what's been the history of doing that, what are the expectations of your community. And so there's advantages and challenges of permitting direct public input during council meetings. The obvious and first advantage is it's very open and transparent, and the public usually likes the ability to come before council and express whatever their usually concerns, as opposed to they don't usually come to council meetings to say what a great job people are doing. They're usually complaining or have some kind of concern. It can be difficult to control. I've seen some agendas where people can come and speak, but only on an item that's on the agenda. Some places have, come speak to us about anything. Some have, you want to appear as a delegation? Well, how widely or tightly are those rules for you to come appear as a delegation? And the challenge is when you have a delegation, it's difficult, next to impossible, to control what they're saying, regardless of if they filled out a form ahead of time or submitted writings ahead of time. And there's an expectation on their part that because you let somebody appear and you heard them and they usually ask you to do something, there's an expectation that you'll agree with them and do it. The challenge can be it might not be something you can do. Chances are you have not got the full story. When I had a number of years ago, I had bylaw enforcement reporting to me and lots of members of the public interacting, and I quickly learned that there's usually three versions of something that happened. There's the version that the public had, there's a version that the bylaw officer had, and then there's what happened, which was usually somewhere in between. And when you're only hearing one side of it, you don't want to react until you know the full picture. You can make a poor decision that, or a decision, not necessarily that's poor, but one that you regret later on because you didn't have the full information. This is in particular, an example that we're having right now, certainly in Kelowna, is with the provincial changes to hunting regulations. We are having people approach, and this comes through the clerk's office, saying, I'd like to come to council to discuss the changes in the hunting regulations and how we're opposed to these and we're local hunters and we want the city to agree with them that the province shouldn't change hunting regulations. Well, that's nothing that the city has any jurisdiction over. It's nothing the city has any expertise in. We don't know the full story as to why the hunting rules were changed. You've got a very passionate, articulate group, but they should be having that conversation with MLAs and with the provincial government. So Kelowna has an example where we are very restrictive as to who comes to speak to council during council meetings. As an alternative, there's a lot of other ways to interact with council members, and that might be we would, for example, with the hunting group, we would say, well, I'm not going to place you on an agenda. However, these are different ways you can get your message to council. You can either distribute something in writing through myself. You can contact them directly. You can arrange for a meeting with the mayor or members of council individually if they're willing to speak with you on whatever topic it is. Another one that we're getting right now is people who are opposed to the installation of smart meters by Fortis, and they're wanting to come to council and give reasons why they're opposed to that. Again, the city isn't installing smart meters. Regardless of your position on them, it's what expectation are you giving if you let a delegation appear? Now, some councils have decided, okay, well, then we'll write a letter to the province on your behalf, and that's fine if you want to do that. That can have implications for your that communication you have with the province over time if you're writing letters saying everything they're doing is wrong because a member of the public is saying so. And again, it's not a right or a wrong way to do it, but there's things to keep in mind that, again, there's advantages and disadvantages. One of the disadvantages of the more restrictive manner that we have in Kelowna is I get a lot of people say, oh, you're not letting me come because you disagree with my topic. And I would say, no, it's nothing to do with your topic. It's just we don't let anybody come and speak to council for those reasons. So it's nothing to do. And we have actually had things where people want to come and council is in favor of that. Acquisition of an abandoned CN rail line is a good example, where a group wanted to come and say that they think council should do this. And I said, well, I'm sorry, you can't come to council and say that. You can, you know, write them, you can talk to them, you can do this. And the next conversation I had was, well, you're obviously opposed to it then. The city doesn't want to purchase this. And that was not accurate at all. But that was how they interpreted me saying, I'm sorry, you can't come to I'm not going to place you on a council meeting agenda. And then there is a sort of a check and balance in that council can, by resolution, and that's why we encourage them to talk to members of council. So council can, by resolution at a council meeting, say, hey, I move that we let the hunters come and talk to council about hunting regulations because I think it's important enough that it should be at a council meeting. And if you can convince someone else to second that and convince a majority of your fellow council members to vote in favor, then they'd be on the agenda. And so that's the example, certainly in Kelowna. When I worked in North Van District, I don't know if that's still the case. Basically, you could talk to council on any topic you wanted to, and that was some of the things that people came to council to talk about were all over the map. And it can certainly raise an expectation that, oh, council's now going to do something because they let me speak to you. And that's the thing that you've got to have a consideration of and then work out a procedure and a process that makes sense for you and your community. As I said, I'm not saying that one way or the other is right or wrong, but you need to be aware of the advantages and challenges of each approach. Just to wrap up, a couple of things that in terms of interacting with staff. And then again, this is something else that can vary depending on the formality of the organization, but staff should always be referring to the mayor as mayor, whatever the mayor's last name is, or your worship, and staff should be referring to councillors as councillor and your last name, not first names. And during council meetings that staff are, certainly in Kelowna, staff are, you know, we do internal training how staff should behave at council meetings, you're addressing the mayor. So even if Councillor X asks the question, you're still responding to the mayor. Your worship, the answer is whatever, not Councillor so-and-so, your question, because you're collectively, you're at that collective decision-making. Similarly, with direction, if council wants staff to do something, it's Councillor X isn't saying, well, I think we need a study on this. Well, does the rest of council think you need a study on that? And so unless the city manager says, yes, we'll do a study, you sort of look around. Is it one member of council thinking this work needs to be done, or does council collectively think this work needs to be done? And I know we're sort of wrapping up on time, and so my sort of concluding thought is the degree of formality of your meetings will vary greatly across... I'll get your question just a sec... will vary greatly across the province. In my earlier comment that I started, this is more of an art than a science. There's different ways to get to where you want to go. And I like to use sometimes a play analogy that when everyone plays their proper role, elected officials are elected officials, staff are staff, the public doesn't get too crazy at council meetings. It's like a very well-run play, and good decisions are made. The agendas, whatever they are advanced. When things can go off the rails, and you know, sometimes staff try to play the role of elected officials, or elected officials try to play the role of staff, it can sort of vary off the rails and become, you know, either a comedy or a tragedy, depending upon your perspective. And what you don't want to see that sort of breakdown to that. And as I said, it's important to find a meeting style that suits your local government and your council and your community, and balance the procedural rules with getting things done. And as I said, that'll vary greatly across the province, but that's sort of my sort of concluding thought I'd like to leave you with. And I know there's at least one question. Yeah. I think it's probably the way that it's a degree of formality. Usually the mayor, and I guess to take a step back, a big picture question is, what's the purpose of having committee the whole meeting and then having the same items at a council meeting? Or, again, I don't know how you divvy things up. Why are you, to me, my first question would be, what's the purpose of the committee of the whole in the first place? And should you be asking that question at a council meeting anyway? But in terms of, sometimes some meetings are less formal than others. Certainly an in-camera meeting is less formal than in practice in Kelowna than, say, an afternoon meeting in front of the media and the public. But it's a question of really, you don't have to have that level of formality. Depends what the mayor's going to say. Thank you, planner or manager for this presentation. Does council have any questions? And it might be, and sometimes the councillor might say, through you to staff, your worship, blah, blah, blah. But that's just reinforcing how meetings work, and it's an example of how formal or informal you want to be. What you want to make sure is that still the mayor is still controlling who speaks and when, and it's not a free-for-all that councillors are just shouting questions at staff in no particular order, that the mayor is actually saying, okay, Councillor X, what's your question? And presumably the councillor is then acknowledging, thank you, your worship, through you I have a question for staff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Any other? Yeah, stuff happens. Yeah, and you know, again, certainly, as I said, we as part of our orientation for both the council and for staff, we make sure that people under, you know, we say this is the level of, in particular for staff, this is the this is how you're expected to behave at a council meeting. And if you're not, then as staff, there's ways to correct that and make sure that that is held. Yeah. Well, again, not knowing all the circumstances, but if it's, the idea is that all members of council have the information before the meeting, so you're prepared. There might be an emerging issue where that doesn't happen, but then usually all of council is getting the new information at the same time. And yeah, that might be a question to, because again, I don't know some of the more background to that, but that might be, doesn't appear to be procedurally fair, in particular if it's about an individual. Rules of procedure fairness say the individual has a right to know what's going to be said about them before it's said about them, depending how formal, you know, what's being, and I'm quite both perplexed and interested in what the background is to that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the back.
I think I'm starting my second term, and I think knowing your rules of procedure, basically treating your procedural bylaw in some ways like your Bible, and that's your defense. I had a bit of worry in the last term, and it operated at some points like a bully. Mm-hmm. And just knowing when you can call a point of personal privilege. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is undermining my ability to participate. They're being embarrassed in the meeting, which will hopefully help to rein in their behaviors. And this, I think, shining light, the whole idea of sunshine, the Freedom Information Association has a sunshine summit. So when you bring public scrutiny to bear, that can really help to deal with improper procedures. With the personnel issue, say, Mayor Chair, there's an in-camera item I'd like to discuss, a personnel item, and that staff member is happy to address it in there. And the city manager should bring that up with them. The council supports it, attention in place, that hopefully, if the procedure is bylaw, it doesn't have enough protections for your rights as a public. As a council member, for the public's right to participate, then propose amendments. And if your council won't get along, the public is actually your biggest ally. You're isolated on your council, work with the community that elected you, and make the issues public. And that's very hard for a majority of the big school Americans public.
Yeah, I think it's about time. Certainly, I'm around if you have further questions. I'm more than happy to discuss them with you. And you coming back up or just... Is the next session next door? And Gary's just mentioning the 8:30 session will be next door. So thank you very much.